Welcome back to Critical Defiance, the show where questioning the status quo isn't just a hobby, it's basically our cardio.
Today we're rolling up, purely metaphorically, please don't snitch, to talk about America's oldest frenemy, marijuana. Is this country finally coming to its senses, or are we still running a national DARE program for adults?
Depending on where you live, you might be legally lighting up or praying your air freshener covers that herbal aroma before your in-laws drop by. Seriously though, you should try explaining the legal patchwork to your grandma if you really want to watch her face go on a full Cheech and Chong journey.
We'll dig into why the war on weed ever started, how state laws turned into a cross-country choose-your-own-adventure, and whether banning pot makes any sense in a country where you can literally DoorDash stronger stuff at 2 a.m.
We'll also tackle whether marijuana prohibition is good policy or just an especially outdated showing of reefer madness on loop.
And we are definitely asking, is it time for the feds to catch up with reality? Or are we destined for a future where crossing state lines with a gummy is riskier than interstate tax evasion?
Stick around. Whether you're a cannabis connoisseur or a curious skeptic, we're about to spark up some real talk. So it's been a week. It has been a week of stuff. We definitely have the weedisode going today. That is the vibe. Yes. I know Bobby and I are both very baked.
Yes.
Bill, not so much. So someone, I guess, is the designated driver this week.
Yes.
But yeah, it's been a week in the news too. We've got flash floods bouncing around again. This time it's all on the East Coast.
Yeah, it was scary over here in some places.
Yeah. I saw water over the roofs of cars in I think it was the Cross Island Expressway in New York.
Really?
Yeah. It was nuts, the flash flooding that we don't normally see in this region. Yeah. And I know down in Maryland, it was really bad. And so far, FEMA has responded to their request for aid with no explanation other than a rejection.
If Maryland is looking for an explanation, they might consider the fact that they're a blue state in a red administration.
That's basically what it is.
Let's be real.
You know that, folks. And there's a $200 million gold-plated ballroom that we're going to put up at the White House that has to be paid for. So there's that, too.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I thought you were going to say that Maryland should start talking to Texas, but...
Has anybody caught a photo of the Oval Office lately?
No.
Oh, my God. It's all gold.
It looks like North Mar-a-Lago.
It really is ridiculous what he's doing. And it's just his taste for gold as some kind of a status symbol is just idiotic at this point.
Ever since I was a little kid, I was always like, no, silver is better. So, I mean, maybe he likes gold because the Cheeto dust doesn't show up as obviously.
I do it tastefully.
Tastefully?
Yeah,
exactly. Do something tasteful. Do something.
Let's not be a douchebag. Let me put it bluntly.
Yeah, do something befitting the White House.
You're telling who to not be a douchebag?
Okay,
yeah, sorry.
So the other one that hit us in the news this week that I thought was weird, just weird, the jobs report came out and it was pretty bad. So Trump immediately claimed that it was rigged and then fired this commissioner for labor statistics because it was rigged. And even the Republicans are going, what are you doing? What?
You said something I don't like.
What is wrong with him? May I open the bidding with...
Let me count the ways.
God.
It's astounding. It's astounding what this administration has done and is doing. And
it just makes me think, next time we have to vote, is it going to come back and he doesn't like it and he's just going to fire everyone who like counts the votes before?
Gee, that's never tried to happen before, has it?
Please, let's not give him ideas. So.
You gave me the numbers. You're fired.
Like, what does that accomplish? So this week's topic is modern marijuana prohibition, guys, and state-based legalization in the U.S.
Spark up for a lively ride through America's high-stakes battle over marijuana laws. We'll hit the highlights, why marijuana became the boogeyman, where it stands now, and whether the continued tug-of-war between prohibition and legalization is as logical as, say, using a lava lamp as a coffee mug.
Picture this. It's the 1800s. it's, and cannabis is just vibing. No one's clutching their pearls about Mary Jane. In fact, it's American as apple pie, used to treat headaches, make rope, and maybe, just maybe, to pull some hijinks on grumpy old President Andrew Jackson. The U.S. government? Really too busy to care about the so-called devil's lettuce.
As a matter of fact, some of our early presidents, some of our founders, including George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, grew hemp.
Exactly.
It was used in textiles back then. It was even possibly used in some of the first drafts of the U.S. Constitution.
Hemp paper was a very common thing back
in
the day.
It was.
Back in the day when it wasn't illegal to grow hemp.
And it's a good renewable resource. There's a reason it's called weed.
I don't want to even say few. I want to say there were virtually no moral or legal judgments regarding cannabis. It grew in the ground. You harvested it. It gave you this. It gave you this. It gave you that. Therefore, what's the problem?
Okay.
What's the problem?
Tobacco. Somebody figured out you could dry it and smoke it. And they said, oh, this does shit too.
Yeah, well, those were Native Americans, and you know what we did to them, right?
Yeah, but I mean, the white man was smoking weed at that point, I do think. Like, we figured out we could smoke weed as a human, just as humans, I think, pretty early on outside of the U.S.
Cannabis was totally accepted and used traditionally, medicinally throughout the world. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just the U.S. It was pretty much everywhere. It was part of the landscape back then. It wasn't something special. It wasn't something big. It wasn't the devil's anything. It wasn't the angel's anything. It was just there. It was just there. Now, as we tiptoe into the 1900s, things start to get messy. Cannabis doesn't suddenly become evil. Nope. It gets swept up in the rising tide of anti-immigrant sentiment. The fun twist? Politicians found it way easier to demonize marijuana when they paired it with xenophobia. And I say marijuana because they did back then, and they spelled it with an H to make it sound more ethnic. California fired the first shot with a ban in 1915, and by the 30s, state bans were popping up quicker than conspiracy theories on Facebook, all fueled by anti-immigration sentiment. Actually, its association with Mexican immigrants was particularly used to fuel fear back then.
William Randolph Hearst, leading journalist of the time, was instrumental in the sensationalizing and the demonization of cannabis and its users. William Randolph Hearst was also a millionaire, but today he would have been a billionaire. He was also in the pockets of, just as we see today, politicians in power, and was more than willing to do their bidding.
That sounds what we have going on today.
Exactly.
Washington Post much?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not to call anybody out, but Washington Post much?
Yeah.
When
history is repeating, when we're still...
When the politicians and the billionaires and the journalists are united, almost nothing is impossible. You can convince the populace of virtually anything.
Agreed.
So,
you know, and a lot of the modern PR and the propaganda machine we have nowadays is a direct derivative of that stuff back then, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
It's really one continuous stream from then to now, with a lot of recycling of the messaging and the fear-mongering and everything else that goes with it.
Yep. History is repeating in too many ways. Enter 1937. Harry Anslinger, think J. Edgar Hoover, but for weed, convinces Congress that cannabis is public enemy number one. Sensationalist newspapers fanned the flames. The Marijuana Tax Act didn't outright ban weed, but it taxed it so aggressively, you'd have thought Uncle Sam was trying to fund the space program. Result? Industrial hemp got the boot. Pour one out for the sturdy rope. And even doctors lost access. The first arrests were as much about bad paperwork as bad habits. This was the Reefer Madness era of propaganda. That movie was made in 1939 and is the most ridiculous thing.
That movie put the Nazi propaganda machine to shame with its portrayal of marijuana and its effects. If you haven't seen it, folks, you got to get on YouTube or find it wherever you can.
It's public domain nowadays, so you can find it anywhere. But right. Yeah, it is
check
absolutely.
It out.
It's a cult classic at this point. People like watch it to make fun of it now. I watched it to celebrate 420 one year. And we still have misinformation about weed today, but I don't think I've seen it shown that flamboyantly.
Well, it shifted placement, really. A lot of the misinformation shifted to lobbying and the industrial side of things, where they kind of drove this rhetoric that weed was horrible because it was competing with their resource supply, with what they were selling, you know, wood pulp.
Yeah, definitely. It was also, weed has always been the more globally conscious resource.
And let's also pick up here on the fact that the American Medical Association opposed the Marijuana Tax Act because it restricted doctors and scientists' ability to research and prescribe cannabis.
That act stifled cannabis medical research for decades and made it such a difficult process that we're still trying to fix today.
All right, potheads, let's jump forward a few decades and a lot of smoky jazz clubs later. Suddenly it's 1970. The Controlled Substances Act. Pot jumps to Schedule 1, a category reserved for drugs with, quote, no accepted medical use, close quotes, and a higher risk factor than Congress's approval ratings. And it is still stuck there federally. Medical science completely ignored. But hey, at least heroin has some company at the top, no? And there were serious political motivations for this. We're looking at the Nixon administration. We're looking at his battle with the counterculture, the hippies, the black community, and his desire to use the drug war to target those same communities and protesters and marginalized groups. In a 1994 interview, John Ehrlichman, who was Nixon's top domestic advisor, said this, quote, the Nixon campaign in 1968 and the Nixon White House after that had two enemies, the anti-war left and black people. You understand what I'm saying? We knew we couldn't make it illegal to be either against the war or black, but by getting the public to associate the hippies with marijuana and blacks with heroin, and then criminalizing both heavily, we could disrupt those communities. We could arrest their leaders, raid their homes, break up their meetings, and vilify them night after night on the evening news. Did we know we were lying about the drugs? Of course we did.
If you ever wanted to know why the war on drugs was started, there you go. The birth of the war on drugs.
And at around the same time, other countries started diverging from what we were doing. Other countries did not stick to the U.S. model. They did not put cannabis in their strictest categories. So it created this disparity between us and the rest of the world, where we started to see these massive criminal justice issues. Where we started to see these massive criminal justice issues like mass incarceration.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at America, America has one of the largest incarcerated segments of its population. And when you look at that incarcerated segment, the percentage of it that is weed users, weed-related crimes, marijuana-related infractions is just insane.
Not to mention when you see the percentage of how many of those prisoners are also African-American or black or just people of color.
The gateway drug theory back then.
Oh, my God.
Marijuana will lead you to harder drugs. You start doing marijuana and tomorrow you'll be doing pills and the week after that you'll be doing cocaine and before you know it, you're shooting heroin in your veins.
They were telling me that in third grade still.
Same here.
Gateway drugs
has been debunked so many times in so many ways with so much scientific research. So why the hell has it lasted so long in public policy? I'm sorry, don't wait for me to answer that because I don't fucking know.
Other than
convenience.
Political convenience, and we have a prison system now that's profit-based, profit-motivated, and who wants to suck the life out of that?
Yeah.
Not the white billionaires.
Yeah. I'm just trying to remember what the four gateway drugs they taught us were again, because I know it was weed, alcohol, I can't remember the other two they considered. I think nicotine was considered a gateway drug.
Nicotine was considered a gateway drug.
At least they were honest enough. At least they were.
I just don't remember what the fourth was.
Yeah, in my generation, it was just weed. Weed was the gateway drug.
We had a few, but weed was always on there.
Weed was the gateway drug for us. Smoking was basically still okay. Weed was the gateway drug. Drinking was only a problem if you were an alcoholic.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we did all of it on TV regularly.
All right, yeah. So they added some by my generation.
Even the long arm of federal law couldn't stop the states from getting creative. The 1970s saw states quietly decriminalizing small amounts, giving birth to legends of tie-dyed Woodstock hippies and nervous parents nationwide. The real game changer came in 2012 when Colorado and Washington said, "Hold my beer," and became the first states to fully legalize recreational cannabis. Suddenly, weed had lawyers, ad agencies, and more regulations than a daycare center. Now, the thing about it was, we wound up with this state-by-state experiment, where states basically started serving as laboratories for democracy, trying out different approaches, some medical, some recreational, some decriminalization-based. Mm. And it became confusing as hell, not just for pot smokers, but it became confusing for travelers, for employers, even for law enforcement.
Yeah, penalties in some states are different than penalties in others. The taxing's different.
You can be in a state where it's perfectly legal next to one where it's absolutely not.
Yeah.
And start getting pulled over simply for having one state's plate.
Yeah.
Which happened a lot when Colorado legalized.
Don't start driving across state lines in that scenario because it gets real quick.
And yet, post-legalization data showed a big reduction in black market violence and, in some cases, changes in policing priorities that were actually pretty positive.
Yeah,
now, kicker was the revenue, right, Bobby?
The unexpected revenue from tax breaks on weed that ended up funding everything from education to homeless prevention, even after the struggles of learning how to tax something like weed.
Don't worry about struggles. Don't worry about struggles. The government will always find a way to tax anything they can possibly tax. If they have to think about it for a year, my heart bleeds. But they'll figure it out. Believe me, they will always figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. But then, you know, you get all this legal limbo, too. You have all these legal gray areas like banking. In some states, the way dispensaries are operated, dispensaries on things like native land. There's all sorts of legal gray areas that you can't really quantify or fully pin down because of the disparity between state and federal laws.
Oh, there's the difference in taxing and also the difficulty still, like, legally with finding things like, you know, we have a legal limit of alcohol for driving, but we still don't know how to
properly measure marijuana.
Yeah, because it's so different person to person and the research has been stunted for so long. And finally, welcome to 2025. 24 states plus DC have legalized recreational cannabis, meaning you can now buy weed almost as easily as overpriced lattes. An even bigger leap, 40 states have rolled out medicinal cannabis, proving that sometimes progress gets baked in one state at a time. Or just baked one co-host at a time. The U.S. is still lacking when it comes to full national legalization, especially compared to Canada, Uruguay, Thailand, other countries that have...
You wouldn't normally put next to us.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because here we still don't have federal legalization. It's still a state's game, which is just ridiculous.
Imagine Thailand, a Southeast Asian nation known for some of the strictest drug regulation on the face of the globe, and you're safe with an ounce of weed in Thailand than you are in half of the United States. I think this makes sense to me. So that's part of the problem. We have so many overlapping and conflicting federal, state, and local regulations that there's no possibility of making sense of it in the bigger picture.
And it makes it almost impossible to get real research out. Like in states where it's fully legal, we can have maybe individuals, but nothing on a government level Can we get really any medicinal research?
Anything you can publish.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But we won't be able to do that until it's federally legalized. And it's just, when most of the country wants something, which doesn't happen a lot here in the U.S., like, just do it at this point.
Well, let me just backpedal a second there, Niels, on the question of how can we get anything published. Under our current Health and Human Services Secretary, I would suggest that potentially anything you or I or Bobby writes could get published.
That's true. That is absolutely true. I'm going to do a paper on the necessity of marijuana for the survival of those with weedabitis.
Weedabitis.
Okay. That is going to be the new disability du jour in this country, weedabitis.
I got weedabitis.
Treating mine right now. Well, you know, we talk about, you know, you talk about the administration, Bill, and like with the volatility we have with this administration and with Trump in particular, and even with whatever comes afterward, if something different does indeed come afterward, rescheduling it, descheduling it, or recriminalizing it are all on the table. It could go any which way that you can imagine.
Yeah.
It's not a stable situation, right, Bobby?
It's definitely not stable. And Trump, this administration is just scary. And I feel like even if some states still want to move one way with weed, it's just going to be whatever the Cheeto man wants that day.
And when you look at the states, the divide between them is growing because of it, because the urban states where it's being decriminalized or legalized are seeing an increase in their overall tax wealth.
Yeah.
The rural states that aren't doing it for whatever reason, be it moral, social, political, police, whatever, aren't. So the wealth gap between the states is rising and it's their own damn fault.
And they were already suffering financially, economically.
But they see the industry as crime and punishment, not as legalization and taxation.
Yeah. And then there's also the issue of our formerly incarcerated people getting a fair shot as the industry becomes legit in some states.
Right.
Or they're being left behind.
Do they get their records expunged?
Mm-hmm.
Do they get their sentences commuted? How does it work? Do they get released? And each state has tried a different approach to this.
Yeah. If you were arrested for having an ounce of weed on you, but now it's legal to have up to 3 ounces of weed on you in your state, they letting you out? Like, you getting anything back?
Can I go home now?
Reparations. But still, we could be in a much better spot. And here's the practical rub. Your ability to buy, smoke, or grow marijuana in America depends more on your state line than your zodiac sign. So ultimately, state experiment is a polite way to say what's legal in Vermont could put you in jail in Alabama.
Absolutely true. And to give you an idea or a little bit of a breakdown, what we've got right now is we've got 24 states plus DC are recreationally legal. We've got 24 states where medical
and counting. 24
and
counting.
Yeah, exactly. We've got 40 states where we've got medical use that's legal. And then we've got 10 states that have a total prohibition. They have public support that's climbing for reform, but they have a total prohibition. On the federal level, it's still illegal. Those 70s books on the law, on the federal, those are not out of date. It is still illegal. They haven't caught up to reality. Ill.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bill, yeah. On the federal law books, marijuana is still classified as a Schedule I drug if you're caught in one of those 10 states that offer a total prohibition on marijuana. You might as well be crossing state lines with heroin.
Yeah, you're screwed six ways from Sunday.
Because your penalties are not distinguished. It's marijuana, it's cocaine, it's heroin. You're fucked. End of discussion.
These things is not like the others.
End of discussion, no debate. You're done. You're just done. So ultimately, the quote, state experiment, unquote, is a polite way of saying what's legal in Vermont could put you in jail for a long time in Alabama. So let's think about whether keeping marijuana illegal at the federal level or in the holdout states makes sense in 2025. There are still some arguments for prohibition, though they're getting a little musty and dusty at this point in time. Remember the gateway drug? Here's a spoiler for you. The vast majority of research does not support this nonsense, okay? Nonsense. And if anything, alcohol is often the true gateway. The reality is a 12 or 13 year old isn't thinking, how can I get some pot? They're thinking, how can I get my hands on a, I don't know, a six pack of beer, airline shot
of
tequila.
They don't know what the kids drink no more.
Right. And then there's the classic,
a beatbox.
Then there's the classic, we gotta protect the kids. First of all, if you want to protect the kids, let's talk about guns and shootings and schools. We know all you have. We know all for that is thoughts and prayers.
Well, if you also want to talk about protecting the kids when it comes to drugs, why don't we look at how many kids still have nicotine addictions? We were supposed to be getting rid of smoking in my lifetime, but then we turned it to vapes that taste like candy or come in from little things that you could play a video game on. And are we protecting the kids from the addiction of the nicotine?
And then there's the reality that youth use in states post-legalization have absolutely not skyrocketed. And the other dark factor, illicit market dealers, the guy around the corner of the building selling pot, he's not going to card you. He's not looking for ID. He's looking for cash. He don't care if you're 12 or 22 or 35. Show him the cash. He'll show you the ounce.
But Bill, it's about public health.
Nonsense. Stop it. Tobacco and alcohol are both legal and, with the brief exception of prohibition, have been for centuries. And both are demonstrably way more dangerous to individuals and to society. So fuck your public health.
I'm going to go the other way.
Go.
I'm going to look at it just in democracy terms. Two-thirds of Americans support legalization. Two-thirds of us. Even most Republicans under 40 have no problem with this. So if we're representing the people, why is this still illegal? Why do we even have prohibition? A lot of the argument for it is just not going to hold water. In 2019, cops arrested more Americans for pot than for all violent crimes combined. $6.8 billion in potential tax revenue could have flown to education, healthcare, or even law enforcement, if you want to be meta about the whole thing. But instead, we're persecuting people.
I want to be meta.
And
I want to be meta. And I've done this before, but I'm going to do it again. Back in the days of Nixon and Watergate, what was the mantra? Follow the money.
Yeah. Corporate prisons. We can just now arrest people for something that grows in the ground. Wow.
You're damn right.
You know, and this prohibition disproportionately targets communities of color.
As always.
Yep. The marginalized, the disenfranchised, and minorities. While the legal market could actually reduce the power and violence of drug cartels and drug dealers. So again, where is the logic? Because none of this stuff feels like it's legitimate to me or you or most of the public. And laws that lack public support undermine trust in law enforcement. People are much less likely to comply with what they see as an arbitrary or outdated rule.
Yeah, even people who haven't done a bunch of research into weed or maybe don't even smoke it at this point are just like, yeah, whatever. The U.S. is currently running a two-tier system. Pot-friendly states are building entire economies and school budgets on legal cannabis, while prohibition states are still jailing people of color disproportionately, for a plant that grows out of the ground. We're still doing this. I can't believe we're still doing this. And legalization hasn't led to an apocalypse. States like Colorado have seen billions in tax revenue and no epidemic of couch lock zombies raiding Taco Bells. So I may be guilty of that.
Me too, from time to time.
Mayhaps.
It happens. But in general, in its entirety, the patchwork system is breaking down. With more states eyeing legalization in 2025, including Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, Hawaii, and Virginia, the pressure is building for the feds to drop the act and fix the fucking scheduling. I'm so sick of it, a plant being in Schedule 1. That
the devil's lettuce.
No, yes, they Kevin's. Knew they were lying. They said it. It's out there. It's been out there since 1994. More people need to hear this. Send this episode to everybody who you know who is against pod.
A lot of lies have been out there for a long time, and still nobody wants to back down. I don't want to mention the current administration directly, but yeah, fuck it, it's out there.
Yeah.
Modern marijuana prohibition in the U.S. is like insisting Blockbuster is going to make a comeback. Nostalgic, impractical, and less reasonable the longer the idea clings to life. Legalization, on the other hand, is proving to be both popular and effective at raising revenue, reducing crime, and treating adults like adults. So for us, I think it's a clear choice, right, guys?
Legalize.
Well, you guys are radicals, Legalize. So I'm not so sure, but yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
Here's where we are today. This insane patchwork of state marijuana laws in the U.S. has created a confusing and really usually unfair system where legality depends more on your state lines than on any sort of consistent logic or policy. Legalization has brought billions of dollars in tax revenue for some states, and it's certainly reduced criminal justice disparities, and it's shown that many of the old arguments for prohibition, as if we didn't already know, just don't stand up to modern scrutiny.
With growing public support and increasing numbers of states pursuing legalization, federal cannabis policy is becoming harder to justify, and longstanding federal-state conflicts are reaching a tipping point.
So what can we all do? We can all contact our local, state, and federal representatives to express our support for legalization. Personal stories about how current laws impact you or your community can have a powerful effect. And you could probably use 5 calls for that too. Bother them. Tell them, hey, while you're arguing about nothing and not fixing what the administration is doing, just sign something that makes weed legal. Thanks.
You can also educate others. You can share actual, factual information about the benefits of legalization and dispelling common myths, whether through conversations or social media or participating in forums or whatever. You can get the word out there that things like the gateway drug story and the link between weed and heroin are just all bullshit.
Support advocacy groups and initiatives working toward equitable legalization, including organizations focused on expunging past convictions and ensuring communities most affected by prohibition have a voice in the legal cannabis industry.
So for next week's episode, we don't quite have a plan. But we were good with that this week. We kind of rolled with it and pulled it off. We've got a list of ideas, and they're really great ideas. And there's, at this point, probably 50 or 60 of them. Mm-hmm. And we don't know which to choose. So over the next couple of days, we're going to reach out to the audience on social media and our website and try and get a feel from you guys as to what the next episode should be. So stay tuned, and we'll get some options out there. I guess it's time for the credits, huh, guys?
Yeah, I guess so.
Time again.
Bobby, hit it.
Your hosts and producers are Niels, Bill, and me, Bobby Socks. Behind the scenes, the audio magic is woven by Niels and Jack, with crucial feedback and assistance from our associate producers, Tyler and Turbo.
Our writer's room is composed of everyone we just mentioned, with help from our friends Skeeter and Jimmy, and occasionally, one of the Daves. We couldn't do any of this without our incredible contributing members, who not only support us, but help steer the ship on episode topics and formatting.
Finally, we'd also like to thank HBO for all those late-night Cheech and Chong movies when we were children.
For more or to get involved, find us at criticaldefiance.com.